Welcome to the How the Heck Have You Been podcast. I'm Mark, and as the title would suggest, I just call up a bunch of people I haven't talked to forever and ask them how the heck they have been. So here's some intro music and the show. All right, y'all, this is a good one. My conversation with Laura Dupay. During our conversation, it struck me that she's one of my longest running friends there for all 3 years of middle school, all 3 years of high school, band, IB, all of that jazz, and we still are in a writing group together, so just great to get caught up with her and let you all know how she's been doing. Here's our talk. Wait, there's the beep, okay. Let's see. Laura Dupay, what's up?
Hi, Mark Dye.
Oh my gosh, I just got shot back to the COVID wham meetings with your background. I haven't seen at this angle since then. It's wild.
There it is.
Oh my gosh, all
I
the lights.
I got more artwork up. I've had like a ton of artwork that's just been sitting in a pile in my closet. And maybe a month ago, I was like, maybe I should frame that.
It's crazy how long it takes to get stuff framed and up on the walls. It's stupid.
Right.
I have about eight
and then
things.
I framed it and then it sat for another month. Just like leaning against my bookcase. And I was like, this is obnoxious and dumb.
Well, the cat's out of the bags. I just let the cat out because we have seen each other since high school.
Yes.
Quite frequently. So for those who listen to the Lauren episode, Laura and Lauren and I have been in a running group with a fellow. Was it Lauren and Ariane went to school together, right?
And that's how. Yeah, Lauren and Ariane went to undergrad.
Yeah, I think so. And so the four of us have been meeting for almost 10 years now. So that's pretty cool. But
yeah, almost 10 years.
Yep.
Is it happening? Is this the podcast? We're doing it?
This is it. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. We hit the ground running.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yep. So that's been pretty cool. But people want to know how you've been. So I was going to have you and Lauren. I need to get Toby on as well. That's kind of the elephant in the room.
I want to know how Toby's been.
Well, he's lost a bunch of weight recently. We were playing racquetball together for a little bit, and so he's getting back in healthy shape and stuff, so that's been cool. But I haven't seen him in the last couple months.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't seen him in, like, almost a decade.
I feel
like we tried a couple things. Yeah, I feel like we tried getting the gang back together, like the middle school gang back together a couple times. And it just never happened.
We need to, because I ran into Christina as well.
Christina Lewis?
Yes. She commissioned me to do a thing for Mr. Mendenhall, her German teacher. That was kind of fun.
Oh.
Or what? No, what did I do? It was the, I did the Spain Fisher, the L.D. Bell print I did with Spain. And I think I just customized it for Mr. Mendenhall. Like I put his name and stuff in it for her. So anyway, sorry. Dropped it off at her house. I think I even went, I went to Rickle Park. Is that the one that had the big bridge?
Yeah.
Where Christina broke her arm. You remember that? Or leg? Was it arm or leg? Yeah. It was arm, right?
I thought it was her arm.
I think it was.
I could be wrong.
Kind of.
As we had a discussion about this a couple weeks ago, that I'm a little bit terrified because I have terrible memory.
Oh,
so
no, you'll be
you
fine.
Could say anything. Oh, God. I hope this is just an audio podcast.
It is. It's just audio.
My,
yeah.
Okay.
Her camera got to flip down to show me the ceiling. Yeah, she broke her arm. And I think I remember we were playing some stupid game, and she was climbing down that big kind of canyon type cliff. Mm-hmm. I mean, we say canyon. It was maybe 12 feet.
It was
12 or 15. But
to our 12-year-old heart.
It did. I mean, there's that old saying of like everything seems smaller now when you go back to high school. But that park did seem really tiny. I remember it being like the bridge spanning Lord of the Rings style across a huge crevasse. And I went back, and it's like a little footbridge over a stream. Like, oh, classic.
Yeah, I think this was 3 or 4 years ago now, but. The Westhurst Elementary, the elementary school that Lauren and I went to, they recently tore it down. And so before they did that, they had like this commemorative night where they invited alumni to come, and
Oh,
they
wow.
opened up the time capsule that our
Oh,
sixth grade
nice.
class like put in, or all the classes put something in it, but it was our sixth grade year. And so a bunch of us went there and were walking through it, and that was it was like walking through a dollhouse.
It's
I was like,
crazy.
this was the school that I went to.
Man, so many memories. Because I went back to Donna Park. I think I mentioned this maybe on the Lauren episode, but I went back not inside but outside because my dad still lives over there. I was jogging. I was like, it's gonna, the playground will have changed so much. It's literally the same playground that was there when I was in
Oh,
sixth grade. Like, that's quality. That's serious. Seriously, it looked
Oh,
good too.
yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, it's quality stuff. It's
Yeah, no
crazy.
kidding.
Oh, man. All right. So let's back it up. We have known each other since seventh grade, technically.
Yeah, I
I
think
think
so.
it was more friends with Toby in seventh, and then you and Lauren and everybody in eighth and ninth.
Yeah, I feel like we all coalesced in like eighth grade,
With
maybe, but.
I think Bastille Day may have been the congealing factor, because that's one of my earlier memories of being invited to that and not knowing what it was and being onboarded into this crazy you, Carmel and Lauren, like in love with the French Revolution and
Completely
musicals. And
insane.
where,
Yeah.
what park did we have? Do you remember the park that Bastille Day celebration was at?
I don't know the name of it, but it was the one directly behind West Hearst. I don't remember the name, but there's like a little park and trail, directly behind that.
I remember telling my dad, I was like, yeah, I was invited to a Bastille, because I didn't know if it was really a thing or not. I'm like, maybe I'm just dumb and
Right.
ignorant. And my dad was like, wait, what?
Wait,
Bastille Day
what?
party?
Like, no, it's just because this should have been your first sign. It's like, oh, these girls are completely insane.
Red flags going up everywhere. But
Yeah.
Toby and I went, and it was fun. We had cake, and I think y'all were all dressed up, right? In period
Probably
style dresses.
we, I think it was for a Shakespeare unit for Mrs. Banner, but the three of us and Catelyn also, we all got real extra about it and sewed like I don't even know what period it
I'm sure
was.
it was
We thought it was
completely
like,
historically
you know,
accurate.
Shakespeare time costumes, like very Scarborough Fair type stuff. And we and I say we sewed. We got our mothers to
Right, I was
sew
about
at
to
least. Like,
ask.
I know that's where mine came from, and I'm sure that Mrs. Denson was responsible for at least
For most of
Lauren's,
it.
if not others. But so we like I remember we went to Casa Manana. I don't know how we got in there, but they let us in there and gave us a tour and stuff. And then those dresses just kind of became our go-to period dresses for
Anything.
whatever going forward. So I'm sure it was those. They were our Shakespeare dresses in the middle of June in Texas, like lunatics. Yeah, and usually cake. And then I don't remember whatever Carmel thought and Lauren thought were a good idea. I was very much the follower.
Well, I mean, it's when you have Lauren and Carmel together, there can be no
Yeah.
other there can be no other
Yeah, there's
input
no room
voices.
for yeah.
Everybody was just brought along for the ride after those two got together. I haven't seen Carmel in a while, actually. I remember she, like, we all got together like late college for something. Maybe it was around Lauren's wedding, but I remember driving somewhere together. And I don't remember why, but
I don't remember.
anyway, it may have been in prep for Lauren's.
It could
But
have been.
since then, I think I've
Yeah.
talked to her a couple times over Facebook.
Yeah, it's
But
been a long time.
I need to have her on too. There's so many people
Yeah.
I need to have on. All right, so that was the wildness there, and then we also, you kind of onboarded Toby and me to musical theater with
Sounds like something that we would do.
Phantom
Yeah.
of the Opera. A lot of listening to that. A lot of
Scarlet Pimpernel,
Scarlet
which was
Pimpernel.
really where the obsession with Bastille Day came from. It was just an obsession with Scarlet Pimpernel, and then there was Jekyll and Hyde.
For those who don't know, Scarlet Pimpernel is like a, basically like the Batman of the French Revolution era. He was pretending to be an aristocrat, All the while, you know, saving some of the people to be slaughtered and whisking them off to safety.
It was completely made up. It was a book by Baroness Orczy, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I'm being totally, we read it cover to cover probably multiple times. But even now, I don't remember it being especially interesting.
Right.
We were mostly obsessed with the musical. And then
I read it much later in life. Like I did that one year where I was trying to read 100 books in a year because my wife bought me like all 30 that were on my list. And it was this unexpected. I was like, oh, I didn't think I'd get these all at once. And so I was like, I should probably power through. So I challenged myself to read 100 books in a year. But then I started cheating and reading like novellas and Shakespeare plays, you know.
I don't think that's cheating. And I probably just getting through it.
Yeah, but I think I say cheating because I think I made it through maybe 6 of the 30 that she got me. So it didn't even really achieve the intended purpose. But I read The Scarlet Pimpernel because I had a copy. I was like, this is much less profound than I thought it was going to be. Like, it was a very popular popular fiction of the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's very pop fiction, like. Not, I mean, it doesn't read like current pop fiction, but it's very like, and then there's the English guy. Everybody thought he was just a doofy dandy, although he was hot, ladies. Can I hear it?
Right.
And then, and they're like, oh, but no, he was actually smarter than every French person put together. I'm like, okay. All right.
It is funny how easy it is to make a character seem super smart. It's kind of like a cheap trick that I'm using in my current thing right now. But
I love it.
Anyway, it's fun to read and fun to watch, but it's not difficult to do on the back end to make somebody seem so smart.
What I remember, so I definitely remember all of that. And I feel like a lot of that kind of stuff was very Carmel and Lauren led. Mm-hmm. Like they were usually the ringleaders of that kind of stuff, but what I really remember us like coalescing in ninth grade, I felt like that was like the perfect year for me because we were in like all the same AP GT classes. Mm-hmm. And we were just like, I felt like it was almost the only difference was like at some point Toby and I split off to take French and everybody else took Spanish, but otherwise we were together.
Did Lauren take Spanish? She must have. They must have cohorted us because of GT English, I think. So like all of those kids, you, me, Toby, Lauren, Matt Schoolfield, Carmel, but Carmel wasn't there for ninth.
No, Carmel left in eighth grade to pursue homeschooling.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, I'm done with this. I'm just going to get a HSE and get out of here.
Yep. But I do remember like walking from the Hurst Junior High lunch to Miss Campbell or maybe Miss Rogers' room and her letting us all in at the same time. And then we did. Now that you mention it, we were all like all traveling in a little cadre all together.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's impossible to overstate Miss Banner's influence on us as well in terms of like,
oh yeah,
all three of us, Lauren, Laura, and me, we, you know, became English majors. I credit her for a lot of that, not 100%, but, you know, she was one of those teachers that we had her eighth and ninth grade. She was really rigorous. And then I kind of, y'all were probably different, but, you know, you kind of dislike her that first year you have her for a lot of the year. And then in ninth grade, you realize, oh, she's actually teaching us, you know, she's like, this is good for us. And in ninth grade, you know, she had already built those fundamentals and we were along for the ride. And
yeah, I don't remember disliking her, but that's because I'm a giant perfectionist and teacher's pet at heart. So I was like, yes, I will win your love.
It's not that I disliked her either. I just remember my oldest sister, who was 6 years ahead of me, had her as well for English. And so I would hear stories about how difficult it was and stuff like that. So that was kind of
so
my preconceived.
Kind of primed for it.
But one of the best things she ever did, too, I have two memories of Miss Banner. And I'm going to have her on. I messaged her, but we couldn't work anything out yet because she was going through a little personal thing. But so she brought us aside. I think she recognized something in the four of us. And she kind of, before she gave everybody else the project on To Kill a Mockingbird, she called the four of us, Toby, me, you, and Lauren in, and like gave us the pick of the litter of, hey, you guys have really been doing a great job. Because that was when this must have been on the Tales of Tale of Two Cities, because, you know, I remember that's the first book I got into. I remember calling Toby, or maybe all, remember three-way calls, four-way calls?
Oh, yeah.
That was a thing. And I forget even how to do it on a, but you could do it on a landline, and yeah, you could like.
It was crucial back then, but I don't remember what we did.
So I remember calling, because we were almost done with the book, and some of us finished Tale of Two Cities on the same day, and like calling each other to talk about the end of that book. And so I think
I remember that one because y'all were reading ahead, at least you were reading ahead, and I was trying to stick
to the schedule.
Sticking to the schedule on Tale of Two Cities, just because I forget things really easily. I read stuff and I enjoy it, but then my brain goes on to other stuff. So I was trying to stick with the class, and you were teasing me about trying to give me spoilers. Yeah. And you kept saying like, oh, this person dies. Oh, this person dies. And I was like, I'm not listening. But I, as a kid, I'd seen the Wishbone of it. And so you named, it's been forever since I've read it. Like, yeah. I said, so whoever the guy is, tis a far, far better thing that I do now than
Cindy Carton. Come on.
Yeah. So you're like, Sydney dies. And I was like, well, I knew that. And you're like, what?
What? I was kidding.
But anyway, you were saying we've done the Tale of Two Cities, and that was the book.
Yeah.
That
and so she gave us the pick of the litter of the projects for To Kill a Mockingbird, because I think she realized how like into the class we were getting. And so Toby and I did a gothic imagery project in To Kill a Mockingbird. And that was fun. All kind of the dark dripping, like grotesque stuff in the book with what's her name, Miss Dubois, the one that gets addicted to morphine and wants to be read to. I taught it a couple years ago. It's been a little while though, but and I forget, what do you know, do you remember that project at all? Do you remember what you and Lauren might have done?
I don't remember what we did, but I remember kind of around Tale of Two Cities as well. I remember Ms. Banner giving us that license, both to like pick which projects we're going to do, and to kind of, she kind of gave us free reign.
Yeah,
just like kind of, I trust you all, just like do something that interests you about this book. And that was revolutionary for me, honestly, at that time, because I just, the idea of a teacher saying like, engage with this text,
yep,
and you tell me what you're getting out of it.
Yeah. And okay, so I just have to go back to the, we were calling each other at night to discuss the ending of a book, which for me was unheard of. Like the fact that she, and it may have been a perfect storm of the four of us being such close friends and having such a good time together and getting into the books, and that, like, I'm sure it was you three plus Miss Banner, but, you know, when we did Frankenstein, I didn't read any of that stupid book. The first six pages, and I was out. Because it was, you know, I was like, okay, monsters, gruesome, you know, this will be good. And, you know, it's so dry, so slow. It's epistolary, which is my least favorite type of writing, which is letters from it wasn't even Frankenstein. It was the captain of the ship at the beginning. And it's a series of letters to his sister just about what they're doing up in the Arctic and the North. And then, oh, I met this guy who was drifting on the ice, and it's Frankenstein. I'm like, oh, this is so boring. Like,
could we not? Yeah.
Yeah. So to have gone from that to me complete, I'm going to use the word onboard again, even though I feel gross saying it a third time. But like to onboard me into A Tale of Two Cities, like this Dickensian novel with flowery language, is quite the feat. So kudos to you and Lauren and Pamela Banner and Toby. But
were you a big reader before that?
No. I say that I read a bunch of Goosebumps before. That must have been elementary school. I remember going to my sister's gymnastic meets and reading Goosebumps like under the stands. So maybe, but I wasn't like a super prolific reader really until Tale of Two Cities, and I thought, oh, what is this? Like the language just completely drew me in, and so from then on it was a love affair. Although I'll admit I didn't read all of the novels in like Miss Medder's class, or I think I may have mentioned this too, but Madame Bovary, like just the title is so off-putting to a teenage boy. Like it rhymes with ovaries, it's Madame, right. It's feminine. I'm like, I am so out. I'm already out. I've just hearing the name, I was, you know, I did not read that one.
That is the first book that I remember reading that made me furious. I remember hating that book, not because it was boring, but because, like, Madame Bovary herself was kind of awful, and she was very entitled and awful to everyone. Just like, and she just kept getting awfuler, and I'm sitting there thinking, why are we reading this? This is terrible. And then it, like, escalates into this, she ends up dying, but it's like this electrifying death scene, and it kind of brings this community together in a way that she had previously been tearing it apart. And I was like, oh, this is why even, like, terrible things still have the power to bring people together. And then, like, the very end of it is like, yeah, that lasted 2 weeks. Everybody hates each other again. That's the first book I've literally so thrown defeatist. Across the room. I was furious.
Now, was that it was a French novel, right? And it's French, it's got that kind of postmodern nihilism. Now, was that the one, like, with the Creole population that you may not even remember? That's like the one thing I remember out of one of those books was that we had, like, discussions about mulatto, the term mulatto and Creole and stuff like that. But that may have been a different book.
I don't remember.
Anyway. Oh, yeah. So Miss Metter. And then we had Miss Nichols, too, for GT English. You must have had her, right?
I think in high school.
Yeah. We did a... I remember doing a... Yeah, we're jumping to high school now. I remember doing a group essay that was really fun. And I don't even remember what book was on. I just remember it feeling novel that I could write a paragraph. And I think you may have done it with me and written a paragraph.
Maybe.
And maybe even Toby, the three of us. But I could be making that up.
Hers, if I'm thinking of... I think that Miss Nichols is the one that I'm thinking of.
She had, like, the stage at the front of her room. She had, like, a raised platform and a couch up there. Yeah.
Yeah. And she fascinated me because, just as a student, because she taught to the test, but not really. I remember her saying, like, if you go through my class, you will make a 5 on your AP test. Mm-hmm. And I remember that she specifically, we had to do book reports, but it was with an eye toward, not like, did you understand this book, but it's, you are explaining this book to your fellow students so that if you get a question about this, any of you are conversant in this book. Basically.
That was a good idea.
It was like, all of you are getting, 30 books in, at a glance. And I remember she was the teacher who told us to read not Grapes of Wrath, but the notes, like the Cliff's Notes on Grapes of Wrath.
Because it's always,
like,
on the
I
test.
Guarantee you, no matter what happens, you can talk about Grapes of Wrath. Yeah. It was like, but we do not have time to read that book in here. And I was very scandalized that we would read the Spark.
Going back to the rule follower, the teacher's pet. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then they added, and that may have been after we graduated, but the AP test added, you could just write about whatever book you wanted to. They eventually were like, here's a list of suggested titles that have this theme in them, but you can choose a novel of your own if you want. So that's
interesting.
Yeah. I remember doing that report, and I remember Joey Berry giving me a hard time because she would open it up to questions about the novel, and so the students could ask you questions about it. And I remember her backing me up, and I had done a really good job. I was proud of the report, and Joey was like, well, what about this? What about this? And she was like, no, Mark already has the 100. I could tell he read it. Joey, shut up. So that was nice of her. I liked her. She was kind of like, she was really kind of sarcastic, but she knew her stuff and in a good way. She was only there for a year, though, which I don't know why.
Yeah,
I don't
what
happened
remember
there.
What happened.
We never got the tea. I bet somebody else would know. Matt Schoolfield might have known. I should have asked him. He knew all the details of all of the... We went out and had drinks after I did the podcast with him last year, and we were trading all of the gossip. I don't know how much of it was true, but probably most of it.
Fascinating. No, I don't care if it's true.
Right.
That's hardly the point of gossip.
So, okay, now I was looking back at my yearbooks, and it struck me that you are one of, like, my most steadfast friends, right? Like, you're the only person so far who has signed all, who have found signatures in all three of my yearbooks.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because I feel like the way that my vague impression of our friendships together is, like, basically I get adopted by more outgoing people. Mm-hmm. I'm very quiet, especially when I was younger. And so I get adopted by someone, and if I like them, I stay with them forever. So, like, in junior high, it was, or in elementary school, I met Lauren and another group of friends that we hung around with. But then when we got to middle school, like, one of them kind of drifted off. Another one went to Central instead of hers.
Wasn't one of those Julie Brown?
Yeah, Julie Brown was part of our elementary group. And then we kind of diverged in middle school. And then we gained Carmel and you and Toby. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is the group. And then Carmel left to homeschool. And then in high school, Lauren left for a private school.
Yep.
And that's where I met Emily Maxwell.
Oh, yeah. And
from there, like, and that too, like, Emily and Lauren had known each other, like, in first grade
mm-hmm.
before Lauren transferred. So it was like I just kind of adopted one of Lauren's old friends.
Yeah.
And then that was my friend. And then
Emily Maxwell, she would. That, so she had during I'm going to try not to mention the group of people who play instruments in March. I'm going to try to not mention that word this episode. But she
Lauren give you a bunch of grief last time, is that why?
No, I think one of my I forget who it was that said that. I think it was Lauren. But
like, for God's sake.
Emily had her older brother's hat. I think they were, like, just miss each other. So like, her brother had just graduated our first year marching, and so she adopted his hat and had never he had never washed it, and it was her goal to never wash it. 3 years, which is really gross looking back.
It's really gross, but on brand.
Yeah, she was great. She had that, like, wild energy, wild card energy.
Yeah,
quiet a lot of the time, and then outbursts of.
Yeah.
But we, like, most of our stuff, like, unless the only thing that could have made it more parallel is if you were in Boy Scouts, which wasn't going to happen back then.
Yeah, somehow I missed that boat.
But we were in IB together. We were in the marching group together. We even were in the same driver's ed class. Do you remember that?
Yes, with Ken and Barbie.
Yes, Ken. Oh my gosh. He was a character. He was a wild.
He was. He looked like a very greasy Santa, and he always had Harley Davidson suspenders.
Greasy Santa. That is the perfect. See, we are. You are a writer.
Tell me I'm
you
wrong.
Are. Yes. Yeah. You are the soul of a writer. Greasy Santa. What was the name of that? It wasn't. It was. Was it Mid Cities? No. Right of Way. I think it was Right of Way Driving School.
Yes, I think you're right.
Because both my sisters went there, so it was like I was looking forward to that. And I was nervous. And I think I was much more excited that you were in my class than you were that I was in. I was like,
oh no, are you kidding me?
Oh my God, Laura.
Thrilled. I was terrified of it. I had no idea that you were going to be in that class. Because I feel like a lot of people were doing the one, like,
Metro
through school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was petrified. I was like, I'm not going to know anybody in there. And then when I saw you, I was just like, it's going to be okay.
Because we did a bunch of our hours in the car, like, with the instructor together, tried to schedule those. That's one of those experiences that's like, you know, going to the DMV. It's one of the few experiences, or public school in general, but public school, you're still kind of stratified by the classes you're in and the group and your friends and stuff. But it's like, you go like, oh, this is what the general populace looks like. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Some interesting characters.
Yeah.
Those people aren't like me. Huh.
Yeah. And I think especially going to such a large high school, there's so much of the school that I feel like I didn't even experience at all. Like, especially being in that musical group that we've referenced before and being in that small subset of classes, it was again very insular. You saw like, I feel like I went to school with about 100 people.
Yeah.
maybe. And then there were another 700 that I guess were also there. And we're just like in the halls.
Well, as a teacher at Grapevine High School, I would go back and I would underline, which seems stupid now. I don't still do that. But I would underline the students I taught out of the yearbook.
Oh.
And it's so few. Like, you know, I would have about 120 to 130 students a year. And that was out of 650. Like, that's like a fifth of the kids. And I don't know any of the others. Fun story. I taught at Grapevine while Post Malone was there. I didn't teach him, but, you know, famous musician now. He's had a couple songs in the Spider-Verse. Yeah. And it's like, I recently heard that. I was talking with a friend. He's like, weren't you teaching Post Malone? I was like, I don't think so. And I went and looked. I was like, no, there he is in the yearbook. I had him, you know, I was there, I think, all 4 years he was. Anyway.
How weird.
It was a weird experience, too, because it's like, fame is so, just deranges people. I'm like, oh my God, I was there at the same time Post Malone was. Like,
yeah, right.
There must be something significant about that. And there's not, you know. It's just,
like, no, not at all.
He just came from that school. Anyway, that was a side quest. Nora Jones also went to Grapevine High School, but that was way back in the day. Anyway. And I think she went to UNT. So my alma mater, this would be a good transition into college talk, but UNT had, I remember two claims to fame where Nora Jones and Dr. Phil did his undergrad at UNT. So there you go. All right. I feel like there was at least one other, man, I feel like we could spend the whole hour talking about that driver's ed school. He was one of the, you didn't go. That was Lauren at the writers conference. Lauren and I went to this, class about, it was a,
isn't
like
ex forensics or something.
Yes, it was an ex police officer, and I was like, oh, I'm writing like a mystery series. This will be good, a young adult thing. And it was the darkest stuff. It was just about how, I mean, you could tell this guy had seen some things, and he was, you know, very just bluntly honest about it, and how brutal and dumb people are. And anyway, that was a wild experience. Lauren and I were kind of like writing notes in the journals to each other. She's like, is this really happening? This is not at all what I was expecting out of this.
Yeah, I remember y'all telling me about it afterwards.
But I remember Ken at Driver's Ed telling us the story about, oh, I still think about this all the time while I'm driving. Okay, so if you do an underhanded turn on the steering wheel and you like...
About it breaking your arm?
Yes. And the...
I also think about that all the time.
It worked. He was a good teacher.
It did. It was just it's going to shatter your forearm, and then those are going to go into your eyes.
Yes. And he told us the story about it happening.
From your arm bones.
That's right. And then he told the story about a girl that happened to her, a guy, I don't remember, but they would they had to take like skin off of their side after the abdomen to fill in the facial stuff. So I, to this day, never turn the wheel underhanded. Yeah. I always do overhanded. I also remember an extremely gripping video about how street signs are manufactured and the metal they use and how they're reflective. Like, what are we watching? Do we really need to know this? But anyway, okay.
The thing that I remember from that driving school is it was when we had a favorite teacher, like actual driving instructor.
Yes, yeah.
I feel like his name was Robert or Roger or something like that. Maybe. But we tried to get in the car with him as often as possible. And I remember him taking us, he was just going to take us on the access roads. And I was like, okay, I was terrified of freeway driving. And I was like, okay, access roads, I can do this. And then we were on the access road and there wasn't an option to keep going. You
had to get on.
And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And he was like, Oh, okay. I guess we have to get on the freeway. It's going to be okay. And then just like talked us through it. And I stayed on the freeway for a while. And so then like we went a certain amount of way and we got out and we traded so you could drive and he drove us back on the freeway. And I remember getting home that night and just breathlessly telling my parents about how we weren't supposed to go on the freeway, but we did. And they're like, honey, this is all he does all day. You really think he doesn't know where the access roads begin and end? And I was like, oh,
that devil.
Oh my God, it's Jedi mind.
That's funny. I remember you driving first one day, and then, you know, you're driving like maybe 2 or 3 miles under the speed limit the whole time, driving safely. Uh-huh. It may have been you, or maybe been somebody a day I had somebody else with me. And then I got on and I was like, accelerated straight to the speed limit and like stuck there. And it's like, oh, you like to drive the speed limit? I was like, yes, I do. I am a busy man. To this day, I've gotten so much worse. I am the worst offensive driver.
I'm a busy 16-year-old. Yeah.
If I'm on a road trip and you're not going 85 or more on the free, on the left lane, I'm like, you better get over because I'm about to pass over. You. Anyway.
I mean, I am that person in the right-hand lane because I know, like, I know who I am.
No, but thank you. It's not a problem with slow drivers. It's a problem with slow drivers who don't understand that the left-hand lane is for passing only.
It's for the fastest.
It's for the faster ones.
Yes.
And it's safer. It's safer to do that than to, like...
safer for everyone. Yeah.
Some people will just literally go the speed limit in the far left lane out of, like, a moral superiority of, like, oh, the speed limit's the speed limit, so I'm going to make sure people drive it. I'm like, oh, my God. Okay.
Like, okay.
Okay, did you... the last thing I was going to talk about from high school...
yeah.
Is... oh, you're also one of the only people I think I've ever known whose house had a den. By the way.
Oh.
That just occurred to me.
Yeah, I guess technically.
And that y'all called it a den. Yeah. I was like, oh, my gosh. I've never met anybody.
Yeah,
who...
I don't... It was just a walled-in garage. I don't know why they called it the den, but it was, I guess, just to delineate it from the living room.
Right, to have a name. Yeah. I thought that was so cool y'all had one. I was like, that's so cool.
And it did,
like,
technically,
cave.
It, like, dropped down a little bit because it was a garage.
Yeah.
But I'm glad. I'll tell my mom how cool our den
was. It was. I was like, I'm so cultured now. I know somebody with a den. But the do you remember the IB trip to Austin that we took?
Yes.
That was the best field trip I've ever been on. And it I was emotionally fraught. That was towards the end of a relationship. I was having a kind of sense the end coming, and that person wasn't on the trip. And so it was one of these, like, just
kind of
no holds bar. Yeah. And there were so many inside jokes. Long John Silver. Do you remember Long John Silver's?
Yes. I remember us being on, it was supposed to be like a back cruise. So
yes,
we were like on a riverboat.
Yes, yes.
And but it was the wrong time of year for the bats.
Right.
So they're like, oh, there's like three. Yay.
And Toby.
Go ahead.
You tell your version.
Okay. I remember us talking about, like, the cliche, this is the first moment of the rest of your life, and us, like, the two of us going on a bit, and we're like, oh, I just realized this is the first moment of the rest of my life. No, wait, this is. No, wait, this is.
We would just
and
keep
I remember
doing it.
Us just, like, in tears laughing at ourselves.
Yes.
And one of the teachers who was supervising us just being like, I guess this is happening.
So I think that was... memory is so bad, but I'm conflating it probably, but I think that was on the cruise that we were doing that, the bat cruise. And then also, Toby was so nervous about the bats, because he was, like, kind of freaked out about there being bats.
Oh.
And so, it may have been you and me, or it must have just been the three of us. I think it was just you, me, and Toby that were doing all this nonsense shenanigans. But he would, like, lean over to look, and I would mess with his hair for a second as if there was a bat. And he thought it really happened. I was like, oh, my God, what was in your... And he looked at me. He's like, are you serious? And he was not joking. And he would look at you. He's like, I think he's serious. He wasn't... he's joking. He's not... he's joking. Anyway, that was a great time. Nothing makes for better radio than inside jokes. But anyway.
Then just, yeah, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. And then as soon as we got there... like, I was just kind of in a funk on the road, and I had my hood on or something. I was just kind of laying down, and I heard people talking about where they wanted to eat, because the teacher would be like, all right, there's this, there's a Long John Silver's. And then somebody walked up to us like, hey, where do y'all want to eat? And I flipped my hood off. I was like, two Long John Silver's, and just sang it. And everybody thought I was, like, asleep, and then I just burst out. It was not that funny, but also the most hilarious thing.
Right.
Anyway, okay. All right, so speaking of college, where'd you go to college? St. John's University, right?
Yes, St. John's College.
St. John's College,
University,
okay.
Is different.
Now, that's up to the northwest somewhere? Colorado or Denver?
I think they're, I don't know. I think they're popular for basketball. That's the one I didn't go to, so I can't tell you.
Wait, where did you go?
I just remember, like, in high school, I went to Santa Fe, to St. John's College in Santa Fe.
Oh, in Santa Fe. Okay, okay.
Yeah, so I just remember, especially in high school, but also in college, when people asked me where I was going, They'd be like, I'm going to St. John's College, not basketball, because that was the only one that people had heard of.
Santa Fe, I didn't, that for some reason has never occurred to me because I've been to Santa Fe and loved it. It's a great little area.
It's really nice. Yeah. That
I
was.
love the architecture and home. It's all, what is it, Adobe? I forget
Yeah,
the,
Adobe.
and they're like also, I mean, it's like this, the quintessential Southwest, like when you see pictures of it or, you know, the, all of the art is the, like Georgia O'Keeffe and you have like the Native American inspired, like tapestries and rugs and stuff. And
Yeah, it's
it's a really
really
awesome
beautiful.
place.
If especially if you're going down like downtown or down like Canyon Road, which is where all the little artist shops are.
Yep. Oh, and then they have in the square they when we were there they had a bunch of people out selling stuff in
Yeah.
the square, all the artisans. It was really cool. And like
Yeah,
a
it was a
really
really
good.
neat place to live. I wish that I had spent more time exploring it at
Yeah.
all because I mean, the campus was kind of like up on the side of a mountain, so it wasn't in Santa Fe proper. It took a little, and I didn't have a car. So it was just like, are you going to walk a few miles to get in there or find someone who will take you? Or you could use the, they had a bus system.
Well, you were so freaked out about getting on the freeway, right, at that point. So that's probably.
Oh, I was freaked out about everything. not that there were really any freeways to get
True.
on in Santa Fe, but but I was so, the campus itself was kind of insulated, and I'm generally kind of a homebody anyway. So if we got to the weekend, my idea of a good time was just like watching movies with friends, not going downtown to
Yeah.
look at. Although everything in Santa Fe is very expensive, so it's not like I could have done anything there.
All the tourists driving the prices up. We went for a ski trip and we almost got snowed in on the like last day. We're about to leave and it like
Oh
started
no.
legit snowing like 3 to 4 inches. So we're like, we better get out of here because it was a little dicey getting out of the driveway.
Yeah, that was my first experience of like real snow. My freshman year, like the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, there was a huge snowstorm, and we never had anything like it again while I was there, but it dumped like 2 feet of snow in a single night and like knocked out the power. And you could tell it was funny the next morning because for some reason there was an unusual number of students from California and Texas specifically. It was like half of the students had come to the from Texas or California. And you could tell who they were because we were all running around like idiots because we'd never seen that much snow in one place.
Let's go play
And
in it.
everybody from the North or the Midwest or like anywhere that had seen snow were like, you're all being dumb. You should go inside. We're like, why would we do that? And then like a couple hours later, when we're all like soaked to the bone and there still is not power or heat, we're like, oh, suddenly everything's terrible and I don't know what to do. But then that, I mean, I grew up here, so as far as I understood, snow is the kind of thing that just comes around for a couple of hours.
Yeah, till the sun rises.
This, it never got warm enough for it to melt until April. So we were stuck with this snow that got in, like compacted down into ice, and it was gross ice full of dirt. And so, and the campus was on a mountain, so you constantly were just slipping and sliding for months between classes. And I was like, never mind. I hate snow. This is terrible.
It's like you're in The Shining. Just
Right? Yeah.
trapped up.
Yes.
Snow everywhere.
But
That's funny.
it was beautiful.
So did you did all four undergrad at St. John's?
Yeah, so St. John's is a
It's like a little liberal arts school, right?
yeah, it's a private liberal arts school built off of the quote Great Books program. So you're studying a bunch of philosophy and you're
Novelist
basically kind of
literature.
taking a tour through the growth of Western philosophy, science, and math. So you start out your freshman year reading Plato and Aristotle, and Thucydides and like doing Euclid's geometry, and then you work up through conics, and then junior year you're learning Newton and Kant, and
That
senior year you're doing
honestly
Hegel and quantum
sounds
physics.
amazing. That sounds really cool. Just hearing
It's
that.
a very cool idea. It's definitely a little problematic in its own way. I mean, it's very Western centric. There's
Yeah,
not
yeah.
a ton of female or it's very like white male centric, and it's great books as decided by a bunch of white men from the 50s. So it's, I mean, it's getting better, and we definitely had a few like breakout classes that you could take that had more diversity. But it's not geared that way. And they do also have a graduate course that you can take that's basically the same thing, but for Eastern classics. And so that for a while I thought I might do that, but it's really expensive.
But as a model, my brain works like chronologically. So the fact that you would start with
Yeah.
those fundamentals, that's one thing that I wish I had. I don't know, when I taught, I would have like a timeline. My first couple of years teaching, I would literally just have a timeline on the wall of all the great authors because I hated jumping around all of the time and not knowing where to put them in eons and eras, but.
Yeah, and it was really fascinating to watch kind of like when you're reading Copernicus to then see that shift
Right.
toward a solar centric system, or as you're especially with your re when you're reading philosophy to see how they influenced each other, because otherwise you wouldn't necessarily understand the references that they're making.
Right.
It's
Or
definitely
the yeah.
interesting.
Or just the logical progression, like the journey that the philosophical eras took from one to the other, like why it would occur to Foucault to say what Foucault said with what came
Yeah.
before him, but
And I think that what made the biggest impact on me as a person going through that system is that it's discussion based. Like there were never any lectures, and it's set up so that you have the largest class you're ever going to have is 20 people, including the teachers. And so basically every class would open with a question about what we'd read for that night, and then it's just a discussion. And you're just reading the original texts. You're not like, we never had a textbook that explained, and here's what Kant was trying to get across. Like, no, we read Kant and then we discussed that. And so
It's funny
it
too,
was.
because as an English teacher, the textbooks are worthless. Like the only reason you have a textbook is for the work, like you say, is to read the story. I would sometimes use discussion questions or writing assignments, but mostly it was stuff that, other teachers liked or we liked. Yeah, that
It
sounds
was,
awesome. Like just
yeah.
as a model, I mean, you could easily pepper in and fold in more of the diverse authors, because there definitely were some women way back then. I mean, for reasons, some obvious, some not, there weren't as many women contributing. But who was the famous poet?
Sappho?
Yeah, Sappho. But anyway, yeah. But that just appeals to my point A to point B.
Well, I do have a little, I don't have a really great love for the great books canon so much anymore,
Yeah.
now being years away from it, but I do really love, and I feel like I got a lot of benefit from the St. John's model of like, it was all about discussion, it was about essays, and in your essays, you aren't referencing like articles or what other people have thought about things.
Yeah, you go
It was,
back to
the
the
whole point
source.
is like, what do you think about this and can you defend it?
Yeah.
And so that, because I mean, all the way up to that point, I was very, like you talk about perfectionist, teacher's pet, rule follower, and I probably would have gone through life like, just tell me exactly what you need from me and I will do that. But this
Yeah.
was very much like developed around the idea like, nope, you're gonna have to think for yourself. So you might want to get started.
It really is crazy how much we trust authoritative figures or some people. For me, that was mostly like during COVID when all of this weird stuff, like masks don't work. We lied because we wanted not everybody to go and buy them. So when that sort of like shady stuff started, I was like, wait a second, I should probably start questioning the authorities here. I guess I'll start thinking critically as a 27-year-old or 37-year-old rather. I feel 27.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like, as a white male myself, those words sound great. I mean, that sounds great. Yeah. All right. Joking. God, quit. Don't hit stop. Go back. Yeah. Fast forward 15 seconds. All right. Let's see. What else? Oh, so do you just have the undergrad like me, or did you do master's?
So I'm currently going back to school for
master's. Which I should know because we're friends and talk regularly. I was modeling conversation. I was pretending I didn't know that.
I liked it.
So that our listeners can benefit from the conversation. So what are you doing? What program is that?
So I've gone back for a master's in library science because I've been working at libraries for a little over a decade now. So it seems like I'm probably here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And
so will that be the official, you are a librarian when you have your master's?
Yes.
Okay.
Technically, I'm just a paraprofessional right now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I don't think I've told this story on the podcast. I had a friend when I taught at a school who was interrupted by whose class was interrupted by an attendance clerk. And she was like, you need to turn your attendance in because you haven't submitted it yet. And he said, oh, I'm in the middle of a class. I'll do that at the end of the class. She's like, no, you need to do it now. And he said, excuse me, there is a reason that you have a para in front of your title. I was like, oh, dang, that's shots fired. That cuts to the quick. I will not mention names or campuses, but anyway.
Yeah, we'll leave that.
I will never forget that story when you said paraprofessional.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I'm not just a paraprofessional. I am a professional.
I mean, professional.
Anyway, I'm sure they won't listen to this.
I definitely, it's funny because definitely when I started working at libraries, not everyone is like this, but there are definitely lots of librarians who will correct you if you're like, no, you're not a librarian. You work at a library.
That is so, okay. So
ever since you told me this
when we first started WHAM, I'm like, really? Is it that? I mean, what skills do you not have?
So it depends because there are.
Convince me. I'm open to be convinced. I'm just like, all right, this seems different than the nurse doctor differentiation.
Oh, for sure. So, and honestly, here's the thing. It goes either way, because there are definitely people who technically have a library degree who cannot research their way out of a paper bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there are also people working in a library, and I would consider myself among them, who do not have a library degree but have enough knowledge that, like, the job that I'm doing is basically the same as the other librarians that I work
right
alongside.
Like, that would be my assumption.
Research.
Because most people are just needing to find a book, or hey, how do I log on to this online database, how can I search. I mean, research is hard. You know, I have somebody who's tries to teach it to 13-year-olds, it's like,
right,
it's not the easiest thing ever.
So the idea behind a library or information science profession or professional degree is more like someone who holds that degree theoretically has been trained in understanding information and data and classification, so that you have, whenever you're looking for something, it may end up, I'm trying to think of a good example, like when people are looking, someone comes up to me and they say, I need a self-help book. I say, okay, that could mean help with like weight loss or exercise, That could mean relationship advice. That could mean mental health. That could mean addiction specialization, all of which are in different places. So, if you have somebody, you want somebody who's been trained in kind of classification to help match people up with information that they're actually looking for. And so that's kind of the idea behind that. And also, so you want someone who understands all of the information in the catalog and how to navigate all of that. So that's your librarian. And also you want someone who it hopefully is skilled at looking at resources and telling whether or not they are accurate or
Authoritative.
well
Well,
researched.
that's one thing I try to teach some of my students is like, okay, here's the thing. Not everybody who writes research articles is super smart at the top of their field, but they all want to appear smart. So they're all going to use language that sounds really fancy. If you're confused, it's not necessarily because you're dumb or uneducated or unknowledgeable. It's because they're writing at this,
Because it, yeah, that this is a smokescreen
it's a
that they
smoke
have put
screen.
on.
I forget the name of the not scam, but the there's this guy, I think it was Stanford, who submitted a bunch of papers. He was a professor just to see if they would get accepted. It was like intentionally just jargon. Literally, he was like, I'm gonna write a paper with no content, like no
It's just like
actual
more of a
substance, and see if they get published. Of course, they all got published, but yeah, authoritativeness too is interesting. I've started
Yeah,
listening to
so
a podcast.
someone who can do evaluating resources and things.
I started listening to a podcast from evolutionary biologists, and they'll actually talk about bad studies and what makes them bad studies. I'm like, wait, scientific studies aren't all aren't all great and like strong studies? Now I gotta. That's when somebody, that's when people say trust the science. I'm like, I don't know what that actually
Like, I don't
means.
know that
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
because I don't have the toolkit to go and analyze how good their science was that they used and where they hid the bodies when they're trying to.
Yeah,
Anyway.
I definitely remember sitting through it was some wellness presentation through work, and it was about, I think, intermittent fasting. And it was part of it. They're like, in this study, three of the four people that they studied like really responded to it. I was like, wait, four
Four
people?
people.
Is that, do you mean like, do you mean 75% or do you mean literally
It was only four.
three out of four people? Like, that's not a sample size. That's not a meaningful, that's not meaningful in any way. But yeah, it's hard. Honestly, it's so hard to get through to evaluate scientific resources, especially just because there's so many different blind spots, and then a lot of times their money is coming from special places. Do you have to take that into account? But yeah, that's why you want an
That's why
information
you want a librarian.
professional, someone
There you
who's
go.
had a
Or paraprofessional.
but yeah, or yeah. But like I said, that grain of salt, because there are definitely people like working part-time in a library who know the place better
Yeah,
than
that would be my like, how many years do you say you've been in the library?
I've been at this library for 11, and I worked at a different one a year before that
Nice. Yeah, I
for
imagine
12.
after 12 years you pick up a lot along the way towards that level of being an official librarian.
Yeah, and so it's been really interesting to go back to school for something that I've been immersed in for over a decade, because I'm not sure. It's interesting because I feel like my classes are a blend of people who came straight from undergrad to graduate school and people like me who've worked in the field for years and are now going back to get their degree. And so it's,
Those
you
naive
can,
young whippersnappers, they don't
always,
know. They haven't seen what you've seen.
they're always much better at the, you know, citing their sources, and everything comes with an official definition and that sort of thing. So it looks much more scholarly. But then when you get to the stuff from me and other people, like, the thing you gotta know is this.
Here's the thing. You're going to get an alt-right conspiracy theorist who
Right.
wants to,
And
who
you
just wants to spend an
cannot
hour talking to somebody, and you're that
Yes.
person.
You are there to be unbiased information source. So you just gotta school your face no matter what kind of wild stuff they spew. You just go, oh, okay. Let me see if I can find you a book on that.
I imagine too, do you ever get these, like, do you ever get just outlandish requests? Like, do you have any, like, for instance, selling my artwork, and nothing wrong with this request. I just would never have expected it. There's this guy who was like, so I sell artwork, mostly seasonal, some holiday stuff, some scenery. And he's like, do you have anything with feet? It's like, no. He's like, well, I'm a
No.
podiatrist, so I, something to put up in my office. I was like, yeah, but what would have been the odds that I had a podiatry-themed drawing? Anyway,
Also,
yeah.
are we sure he's a podiatrist,
Well,
though?
you never know. You never know. And
Well,
again, nothing
you know, it
wrong
could
with wanting a
happen,
drawing of
but
feet.
also,
Just,
like, it's a weird way to start a conversation. Where's
yeah.
your foot section? Yeah.
But.
But yeah, there are definitely. Sometimes you'll get people who come in and they're like, yeah, where is your section on literary critique of
John
artistic
Donne's,
interpretation of basket weaving? You're like, I'm sorry, section? I can see if there has ever been even one book
written,
written on this. And my favorite is like they'll reference some like really obscure author or someone like indie published or self-published. We get this a lot now, just because there are so many authors publishing like exclusively online, like exclusively through Kindle or something like that. So they'll say, do you have which books do you have? It's like, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have them. And then you get this little snooty like, really? I'm surprised y'all haven't
So
bought any
popular.
of their stuff. And then I look it up and it's like, their words have never touched a tangible piece of paper. It's like they are all, their entire catalog is 99 cents on
Digital.
Kindle. Can I send you that way? But so there are a lot of, sometimes people get a little myopic about
Yeah.
whatever they're curious about. But that's fine.
It's funny. I think it belays our, not belays, betrays our lack of statistical thinking sometimes. Like, sometimes I'll meet somebody in maybe like Austin or something, or where, if I'm far away from home, like, yeah, I'm from North Richland Hills. And my wife is like, they don't know where that is. Like, just say Fort Worth.
Nobody knows that.
Really? North Richland Hills? Anyway.
I definitely remember being like in junior high and telling someone, I think I was in Galveston, and I was talking to somebody. He was from New York, and I was like, yeah, I'm from the Metroplex. And he was like, that means nothing.
It's a
What
made
is
up
that?
word, yeah.
Yeah.
It was some advertiser, some I forget. I heard there was a radio show. What was the guy's name? Russ Martin used to talk about the history of the term Metroplex, because it was some guy from the area made it up
Oh,
as a as an
yeah,
ad
it was some kind
campaign for
of
the area.
branding thing, yeah.
Branding. But yeah, nobody else uses that term to refer. I mean, it is huge. I've said it multiple times, but I remember driving to Ariane's house one time for where she lived in kind of North Dallas.
Yeah,
And like, from here to there, it was just concrete after concrete after concrete, city after big city after, highly populated suburban cities, just like, no
Yeah.
country for thousands of square miles. Craziness.
Yeah.
I guess hundreds is not thousands, but
I was about to say, like,
yeah.
that seems,
Speaking
I
of
don't think you know
not knowing no
thousands. Yeah.
statistical numbers.
I mean, I'm also terrible about that. It's like anything that's longer than like 3 feet, I have no
But I mean,
clue for.
I drove for an hour to get there and never
Right.
went into any part of the country, right? Never went to any rural area.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, we're getting close to the hour mark here, Laura.
I
Actually,
know.
okay, I have something. This is up to you, but You may remember this little book that I designed the cover for, and I think it's a TOK history collection of Where I'm From poems.
God, I remember. I love.
Yeah, Miss Couch, okay. Shout out.
Yeah, Miss Couch. Jennifer Couch. Honestly, that class is why I went to St. John's.
Yeah.
Because I remember reading The Allegory of the Cave in that class. And then I got, because I had no idea what I wanted to do for college. And so I went to like one of those college nights that they have and basically signed my name up on every single. It was like, would you like to receive literature from our school?
Nice.
Sure.
Of course.
And the St. John's one, their marketing is always like, the teachers that are, the professors who are coming back next year. And it's like, Aristotle, Wittgenstein,
oh,
all
gosh.
Of that stuff. So I was like, oh, that's where I want to go. It's just theory of knowledge for 4 years
yeah.
straight.
That was a fun class. In fact, oh, you know what I still have? Right here. It's all rubbed off, but she had little cups of Zen. Do you remember
yeah.
that? Do you have
I
yours?
I don't know where mine is, but you I definitely at, still have my.
She's looking around, yeah. I need a rewrite on here. 2003 to 2004 from Miss Couch. I need to have her on the show, too. Although I couldn't get
great.
A hold of her. So she, because I reached out when I was going to do, last year I did the LD Bell Craft Show. Because
oh, yeah.
I remember I was all, because I had started doing this artwork that I do in high school. Like we, like the cover
yeah.
I just showed you is in kind of in my developing style. And I did another piece for her that was a giraffe throwing up the universe because there was some stupid joke that I made or somebody made in class about, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was an article we read about the Big Bang Theory. Like, it could have been, you know, thrown up by a giraffe.
Oh.
And so I drew
uh-huh.
I drew it. But then I was like, oh, I'm going to sell art at the craft show, at the LD Bell craft fair. And she,
yeah.
like, quickly tempered my expectations. She's like, I think that's a big deal to get into, Mark. It's like, I'll just
oh.
do it next month. I'll just print up a bunch of stuff and just randomly sell,
oh.
you know.
Oh.
So it was kind of cool, like 20 years later, to finally actually
like, finally
build
it.
Up, yeah, build up enough stuff to sell at the show. So I
oh,
messaged her. I think
great.
I texted her because I had her cell phone, but it may have been somebody else's number by this point.
Yeah.
She never responded, so I need to find her. But, okay,
yeah.
do you feel comfortable with me reading your Where I'm From poem?
Oh, my God. Yeah, do it.
Okay, if not, if there's something so personal, we can cut it. But
I can't imagine I put something
yeah.
that personal into something that we did for class.
Yeah, that we read in front of everybody.
Yeah,
well,
I can't imagine
of...
anything. I definitely would have been 1,000 times more embarrassed by things back then than I would be now. So I'm sure that we're safe.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I got to say, okay, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, I got a Facebook message from a kid that was currently enrolled at LD Bell. And he had found our poems and he had messaged me saying, hey, I just want to say I really liked your poem. I read it. It's like, oh my God,
oh
that's
my
amazing.
God.
Yeah.
That's
he was like, he was like, I opened up to yours and I really liked it. So I just wanted to reach out to say, like, that's really cool. Anyway,
that's
it's just
that cool.
Completely out of the blue. All right, here's Where I'm From by Laura Dupe. I am from playtime, from hide and seek and dress up and Saturday morning cartoons. I am from grandma's house, from the old man picking through the vegetable garden and his snowy haired wife bustling around the kitchen. I am from a steepled building full of warm faces and amazing stories of love and power and wisdom. I am from legends, from castles and secret passageways and epic adventures. I am from imagination, from hours of making my own rules and weaving my own stories. I am from the backyard, from climbing up trees and crawling through bushes and digging a hole trying to find China. I am from school, from textbooks and tests. I am from thinking and learning and discovery. I am from church camp, from silly songs and serious questions, where the perfect stranger becomes a perfect friend. I am from friends, from adventures in parks and home movies, and proving that teenagers can still play pretend. I am from the curiosity, from a thirst for knowledge and a hunger for truth. I am from weekends, from days of action and adventure, and days of lying in the grass and talking and watching the sun move across the sky. I am from peace and kindness, from being there for those who need me, and knowing they'll be there for me too. I am from having a smile ready just in case someone needs it. I am from love.
Aww,
not bad.
Look at that.
That's pretty good.
A little bit of That's so fun.
My favorite line, teenagers can still play pretend. Damn right, we can.
And we did.
So can much. Adult 30-year-olds.
Yup.
Nice. Okay, now before we get into your quiz, I also have what you wrote for me.
A quiz?
Oh, yeah, of course. I have a little quiz challenge for every contestant. You know that. You've listened to every episode, right?
I mean, I definitely have. But before that...
All right, so here's what you wrote to me. Let's not go backward here. I think this is our sophomore year.
Are you pulling out your book? Oh, yep, I have mine. I brought mine out just in case.
Oh, you're the first one.
Yeah.
Look at that. That's what I'm saying. Steadfast friend here. Okay. Here's what you wrote.
This is our senior year.
Here's what you wrote to me, 10th grade year. Okay. Hello, Mr. Dye. Wow, this year has been fun. When I actually saw you. Yeah, great band year. Oh, dang it, I said it. I was just reading. Great band year. I will be on the field with you next year. Good times in chemistry and math. I still can't believe Miss Odom put us all in a group for a few weeks. Ah, good times. Can't think of much to say because I know I'll see you over the summer. I will leave you with this. Never forget the old Arabian man. Salam. Laura D.
Do you remember the old Arabian man?
No, I don't.
Because I certainly
no memory
don't.
Of that. I think it was non sequitur. I think you were just...
Probably. It was just...
Okay, here's junior year. Oh, maybe. Yeah, here it is. It's upside down. Right. Hi, Mark. I'm writing here so I don't leave a note on your autographs page. It's been a lot of fun having all those classes together. All the memories. Sleeping in math. Pretending to stab me in English. Ah, those are the days. Oh, lots of jokes, too. Long live the Windmaster. I don't remember that one. Windmaster. That was probably from the IB trip.
Probably.
Because that was that year, at the end of that year. There are too many things to talk about, though I feel compelled to do so, considering my length requirement. I probably said you had to write a page or something.
Oh, I think you probably did, yeah.
This morning, I was thinking about how interesting a high school reunion would be. I can't wait to see what all my classmates will have been doing and seeing if it's the same thing they planned. Of course, I'll have to make sure I'm successful by then, so I've got my work cut out for me. But that's not the point. The point is... that when we all go to our high school reunion, which I sincerely hope you will, because I don't want to be a loser who doesn't know anyone, I hope you will be an Eagle Scout, English teacher with an IB diploma, and a great family. I hope I've written a best-selling novel, but I digress. Which you will by the time we do.
Well, yeah, well, we're way past our 10-year reunion.
Oh, 10-year, yeah, this would be 20. I hope you have a great summer. We should do stuff. And maybe we'll have classes together again. Peace. Peace sign, heart sign, and smiley face sign. Peace, love, and happiness. Laura Dupay. Oh, P.S. Hold on. P.S. I think I'll go around your yearbook writing inside jokes in it when I have the chance.
Ooh,
yeah, you wrote that in like a silver thing. Interesting. Or maybe that. Anyway, yeah, nice. All right, and last but not least.
Good news, you ticked off all the boxes that I... set out for you.
I know, right?
I gave you a list, and you got all of them.
I did it.
Good job.
Now, I need to write a best-selling novel, and so do you.
Yeah.
Because that's still both one of our goals. Okay.
We're on the way.
Mark, so ends yet another year of public education. Let's see. I've known you since 8th grade. I remember all the great junior high shenanigans. Those were the days. .. And this is in a different pen now, so you must have come back to finish it. I'm afraid I've known you so long, I can't think of anything to say. So this is where you reminisce and pretend I'm writing about them. Mrs. Banner's, Bastille Day, Starbucks, good times. Well, we've still got another summer, and we have to stay in touch. And we did. I'll miss having you in classes, but I promise I won't forget you. Don't you forget about me. Especially since I've got El Marco tattooed on half of my stuff. Well, best of luck at UNT. Love, Laura Dupay. And that was my derivative of... Bart Simpson writing El Bart. What was his? He had some like, it wasn't El Barto, but it was something that he wrote on everything.
Yeah, I just remember it was on everything. Okay, here's what you wrote in my senior year book. Laura, you are one of my most respectable friends, and I'm glad that I was able to know you for such a long time, and you guys have kept me going. I'd say it's been a great run, and we have to keep in touch and trade teaching techniques. Oh, I was thinking I was going to be a teacher.
Yeah.
Turns out I don't like kids that much.
They're the worst.
Anyway, we'll definitely hang out in the summer, so there'll be a time for goodbyes later. But thanks for always being there. Love, Mark Dye.
Oh, well, that was actually sincere.
It was.
I expected something stupid.
Yeah.
What's the cover of that one? Because I had you sign in my copy of The Hobbit for some reason.
Oh,
and it was like a big mystery last year on the podcast. I was like, I can't find my senior yearbook. I must have one. And then I started reading The Hobbit to my daughter, and I opened it up. I was like, oh yeah, I had them sign this for some reason because I'm an idiot. I will say, though, I mentioned this on Lauren's episode, but you and Carmel and Lauren threw me at the Happy Guy Day party when I was in kind of a funk. My parents had gotten a divorce recently. And y'all could tell I needed some pepping up, and so y'all did this whole thing. And the main memory I have is y'all were dressed all weird, like weird 80s stuff,
yeah,
and hair.
I remember it being like elaborate, yeah, bizarre.
And your hair was all pulled to one side in a side ponytail, like, ooh, combed over, nice, into a ponytail. And that always has stuck with me because it is such a weird way to do hair. But
thanks,
anyway,
80s. Yeah.
But it was one of those moments. I was like, oh, I have better friends than a lot of people do, because they wouldn't.
Yeah,
all do
I feel
that.
Like we have a good group that we kind of stick together with. And nice. I'm really glad, because you're the reason, honestly, that we all did get back together. Because
that's true.
You wanted,
yeah,
to start a writing group. Yep. I don't know that we would have hung out as much. I mean, yeah, you and I occasionally talk, because I have the same name as one of your sisters, so you accidentally call
text
me
you all the
sometimes.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
The same same first name and last initial.
Yeah.
Or, well, I guess you don't anymore, because she's a St. John now, which is funny, because you went,
yeah,
to St. John's, but her last name is now St. John. But that's also, that used to occur, I had you remember Heather Hayden, right? Then I had a friend in college whose name was Heather, so I would all the time be texting Heather Hayden on accident. You're like,
yeah,
this isn't, I don't know you anymore. We're not friends anymore.
I was like,
texting,
sorry,
me,
but I guess we'll text a little bit.
Because it was Heather Hahn was her name. Anyway.
Okay.
All right, so almost quiz time, but first,
right,
my prepared statements. Speaking of sentimentality, Laura, ooh, because of your steadfastness, sagacity, and bright wit, I am sincerely grateful and better for having known you. You are one of the hundreds of kind, generous, and benevolent people I know in a world where we need every single one we can get. So keep being awesome and doing awesome things and writing awesome books and starting to take up cocaine. Okay?
Yeah, we discussed that a couple weeks ago, that what I really need in my life is cocaine.
Laura is the most brilliant writer. Like on a first draft, it's like, you know, she has the most raw talent out of, in my opinion, out of all four of us in the writing group. But it's a matter of you like sitting down,
right, I have to actually,
and really focusing.
And
so I told her, yeah, cocaine would, yeah, really help. No, don't do cocaine. Don't do drugs.
Well, I didn't.
I'm interested in this caveat. Don't do drugs. Well, Mark, hold on.
No. I was trying to segue into my own sincere compliment for,
oh, okay,
you.
Okay,
I didn't,
sorry,
prepare,
sorry,
a statement. But yeah, to be clear, in case my current or future employers are listening, I have no intention of picking up cocaine.
That's all me. That's all me.
No, so, just trying to get into that mindset naturally without the cocaine. But
yeah.
So I think I'm grateful. I'm especially grateful to still have you around on such a regular basis, because you kind of, like what you were just saying, that I get like stuck in trying to get something done. And you are probably the best example in my life of someone who, you want to do a thing, so you find the steps towards doing it. And then you just start, like, you wanted to write a book, and so you set up a group so that we could all critique together, and you realized that, you know, enough people complimented you on this art style that you made up for yourself and had been doing for so long, and now you've pivoted all of that into a business. And I feel like a lot of people our age are always looking for like side hustles and,
mm-hmm,
stuff, like ways to monetize what they're doing. But I think that having watched you build that business, I feel like you've gone about it in a really smart way. And that is inspiring to me, to see, like, it doesn't have to be perfect the first time around. It doesn't have to be huge.
Oh,
it,
man,
doesn't have to make a huge splash. You just have to keep working,
yeah,
on stuff. And
those first, well, I'll just share this story. The first real show I did was a disaster because it was still, I mean, it was the worst time to start like a pop-up art stand was during COVID, but it was it was like this church show. It was a small church. Knowing what I know now, I never would have done that show. It was like way out. I forget what city it was in, but it was like, you know, a 40-minute drive. And I had my sister try to sell her some of her stuff. And it was like this really low turnout. And so I had brought her into it. And like the only things I sold were to people that I knew that came to support. Like my dad and my brother-in-law were the only, like, they're the only reason I made any money at all. And the feeling of utter, like, failure that night, it was like terrifying. I think it was a 2-day show, maybe even. I had to go back the next day or something. I felt like so awful, but so anyway, that I've learned a lot since then and have learned to choose shows a little more wisely and learn what sells and what doesn't. But thank you, that means a lot.
Awesome.
Yeah, anything worth doing is gonna feel like utter garbage the first couple times you
because
it's like you want to succeed at it, and when you don't, it feels bad. But
yeah, I always forget that the learning curve is a thing, and you just have to it's not, you can't sidestep it, you can't skip to the fun part.
And that's the exhausting thing about writing, is that you never are going to get really so good that it's not going to take thousands of hours of dedication to a book, and that a first draft is always going to be a super weak and flimsy first draft. Cool. Okay, now I get to quiz you. All right. Your quiz is over library trivia. Let's go. You're probably going to get all these. I don't want to set you up for failure, but these seem a little easier than some. Okay, 5 questions. You have 7 seconds to answer officially.
7 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Multiple choice, A through D. So, okay. The Bryant Park location of the New York Public Library features patience and fortitude. 2 large marble statues of what animal? A. Do you know it already?
The lions.
Yeah, lions. Okay. Here's how clever I am. The option choices were lion, tiger, bear, opossum.
And oh my.
Opossum. Okay, so dumb.
Yeah, I liked it.
Number 2. The Bodleian Library is the main research library of which famous university? There is evidence of teaching at this university as early as 1096. Is it A, Cambridge, B, Oxford, C, University of Paris, or D, William and Mary College?
Oh, I don't know. Oxford?
Correct.
Lucky.
All right. That was a close one. 3, let's test your movie knowledge. Inmate Andy Dufresne takes over managing the prison library when his friend Brooks is paroled. In what 1994 film starring Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman? A, Bruce Almighty, B, Seven, C, Mystic River. Why are you laughing? D, The Shawshank Redemption.
Because I'm just trying to reimagine Bruce Almighty in this context. But is Shawshank Redemption?
Yes. That would be kind of a funny movie if you put Bruce Almighty in the prison. Which, this is just random side trivia, The Shawshank Redemption was a short story written by Stephen King, which is always floors me when I remember that, because he's so known for not writing that type of fiction. But it was a little short story called Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption. All right, number 4. Between 1883 and 1929, what Scottish-American titan of the steel industry funded more than 2,500 libraries bearing his name? A, Vanderbilt, B, Rockefeller, C, Carnegie, or D, J.P. Morgan?
I want to say Carnegie.
Correct. I was about to say, if there's 2,500 libraries, you probably would have heard his name more than others. All right, you are 4 for 4. Let's see. I think this one you might get this one too. All right, number 5. Famously, burned by Julius Caesar, one of the greatest libraries of the ancient world was founded in the 3rd century B.C. in what Egyptian city? Cairo, Alexandria, Aswan, or Giza?
Alexandria, right?
Yes, the Library of Alexandria.
I didn't realize that was burned by Caesar.
Yeah, and I think
that the Library of Alexandria burned, but I didn't know.
Yes, yeah, and I think that's when we got saved by the Muslims. Like,
because
there was this, during the Dark Ages, like a bunch of Islamic scholars had all copies of all of our like philosophy and stuff, and we're able to reseed copies of it later.
Just fascinating. That's something that I would like to know more about. Like, I don't have a good understanding of history and how it all works together.
Same. Yep.
Maybe I'll do that.
All right, this was fun. This was as effortless as I thought it would be. Thanks for doing it.
And I didn't have, I just assumed this would mostly be dead air with me trying to remember anything from high school.
No. Well, I will say, I mentioned the adjectives I used in the prepared statement. That's something that struck me, especially recently in writing group. You always have, like, you seem to see the world much more clearly than I do. You probably don't feel that way sometimes, but you'll say things like, I would have never known to say that. Like, I don't even know that term. So anyway, I just love that you bring the kind of a worldliness or a, like I said, sagacity. That's one of the vocab words I'm teaching right now. So that's why I used it, but keen insight.
When I go to work tomorrow, I'm just going to write it on all of my business cards. Sagacious in your library loan.
Is it sagacity or sagacity?
I think I heard sagacity, but more. I feel like the adjective is sagacious. I've never heard it sagacious. That sounds like you need to fart.
Sagacity just sounds too, it sounds too like twangy, but I think it is.
Sagacity sounds weird to me though.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Alrighty. Well, see you next week. No, all I'm right. kidding. It's been good catching up after 20 years, not ever having seen you or talked to you since then.
Right. But I look forward to talking to you in another 20.
Yep. I do wonder what they're, I've seen some posts on the Facebook group for our class reunion that they're like selling shirts and stuff. So I'm still mad about the 10 years ago reunion, but.
I love that you read that thing where I was like, I hope I'm not one of those losers who doesn't go to their high school reunion. Because I definitely remember high school reunion coming around and you being like, are you going? I was like, no, why would I?
I'll probably try to pre-arrange something like, hey, if you're in town for this, let's do this. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be fun. But I think that by the time, once I'd been a couple years into college, I realized I was like, oh, I barely, like we were talking about before, like I feel like I went to a school of like a very small subset of the people we actually went to school with. So I was like, what am I going to do at a reunion?
Yeah, that's the other. Yeah, because I went to Sally's. She was a year above us, for those who don't know, at L.D. Bell. And it is this weird thing where it's like, because
Sally was at L.D. Bell?
Yeah. Yep. I didn't know her. No, yeah, I didn't actually know her at Bell. Like, we didn't have. I think she and Claire and Susanna may have known each other through class or through Stuco.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. She graduated. She was number 10 in her class of.
No way,
2003. So, but when we went to that reunion, it's like there were so many people at our high school, and such a small portion of them go that you don't know most of the people who are even there, kind of.
Right.
So anyway, we'll have to just like message the people that we were close with.
Just like everybody you're having on this podcast, we'll all get together for a special podcast episode.
Yeah. How the heck have you been?
Yeah, how the heck have you been in reunion?
Well, Matt Schofield wanted to like start doing something. I mean, I think he talked about doing it weekly or monthly. I'm like, that's a lot. I mean, I don't think I could commit that many days a year to do it, but we should like every summer or something. Like, hey, come to the Bedford Boys Ranch.
That'd be fun if we like had a yearly.
Yeah, just open invitation to people.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do it. Keep me honest.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Laura. Well, thanks for doing this. Right. I'm going to go
jog
and pick up the girls. So.
How fun.
All righty.
All right.
See you later. Bye.
I just waved at you and I still don't have a video.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
Imagine me waving. It's happening.
Right. Bye. Hey, guys. Before the outro, just wanted to remind you that the How the Heck Have You Been podcast is brought to you by the Art by Marker deck of playing cards. So I hand drew the artwork for all 52 cards plus two jokers. It's pretty sweet. Head over to my website, artbymarker.com, to check them out and support this one-man show. Thank you. All right, that was the show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Today's episode was recorded by Mark Dye. Our editor is Mark Dye, and he is also the executive producer. The intro and outro music was composed by Mark Dye in high school. It's really just me doing this. To support the How the Heck Have You Been podcast, visit artbymarker.com and buy some cool art. Thanks, y'all.